Okay, we'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. Ariana, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Here.
Councilmember Christensen?
Here.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Here.
Councilmember McPherson?
Here.
Mayor Steer?
Here. Thank you. And we have Stan Johnson from Change Life Church to give her invocation. If you will all rise, please, and then we'll do the Pledge of Allegiance right after that.
Mayor, Council. Father, thank you again for this day. Thank you for our city. Thank you for our leaders for the time that they spend governing. And I would just ask again for your blessing upon them, give them wisdom and insight. Thank you for our town. We do pray for our firefighters and our police officers for what they do for us. And I just ask you to bless all our community. And we pray this in Jesus' name.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. And we do have some scouts out here. If you want to stand up and let us know where you're from and introduce yourselves. Very good. Thank you very much for coming. I hope you don't get too excited. These are really exciting and riveting meetings. So, first item up is the consent agenda. Is there any questions, comments, or motion to approve?
If nobody has anything, I move we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any further discussion? Ariana, would you poll the council, please?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Community reports and requests. We have an assessment briefing. Robert McQuaid isn't here from the Ada County Assessors, but Bob Smith is. Is that right? Bob Smith?
Brian Smith.
Brian Smith. All right.
Well, Brad.
Brad Smith. All right. Well, Mr. close.
Smith.
It's B. Smith.
Awesome.
Thank you. I should have had you go ahead and write that down like you asked me.
Yeah, the handouts will give you a little more detail on what I'm going to be talking about. And at any point, if you have any questions, feel free to ask. This presentation will only take about 8 minutes to go through it. So my name is Brad Smith. I'm Chief Deputy for the Ada County Assessor's Office. And Bob McQuaid, he unfortunately couldn't be here today. He's over at Star, so I got the choice to pick between CUNA and Star, so that's why I'm here. Made the right decision.
Good man.
Yes. So essentially, here this weekend, we're going to start setting up assessments. And altogether, we send out about 200,000 assessments through Ada County, so quite a few of them for CUNA. For the city, we send out about 8,700 assessment notices in total. And the reason these are so important, it gives people an indication of the value of their property, but the reason we come out and do these roadshows that Bob really likes to do it is it gives the council members and just gives them an idea of where the values are going and as far as for budgeting purposes. In the past, you really didn't know where the numbers are going, and you'd have to wait for the abstracts, which came out later in the year. So this kind of gives you an estimated idea of where it's going. I mean, it's no surprise there's just tons of growth out here. It just seems to be throughout all of Ada County. A question that comes up quite a bit is how close are our values to actual property sell prices? And there's a misnomer that we might be 10, 20, 30% on the conservative side. By state law, we're supposed to be 100% market value, so that's what we shoot for. And it's important to understand that our lien date is January 1st, so when you get your assessment notice here in a week or two, keep in mind that's for January 1st. So in this market that's moving so fast, by the time you get it, it's already 5, 6 months beyond the lien date. So in this market, you can already be on the conservative side compared to what your market would be worth in today's market. The numbers that are up here, I know it's kind of hard for you to see. We get graded by the State Tax Commission. They oversee, they basically test about 13,000 of our cells every year within Ada County, and then they do what they call a ratio study. So in this instance, for residential improved properties for 2017, we're at 97%, which means we're about 3% on the conservative side. Technically, we like to be about 100%. We like to err a little bit on the lower side than the higher side. And then for 2018, you can see our ratio slips a little bit. We're at 96. So overall, we're about 4% on the low side. And with the market increasing as fast as it is, it's hard to kind of keep up with values. They're just kind of spiraling out of control. A commercial improved 94% last year for 2017, and for 2018, 95%. Total market value for CUNA is $1.86 billion, and then after you take off the homeowner's exemption and other exemptions, which would be like churches and stuff, and then add back in the operating property, which the State Tax Commission does, you end up with a total potential taxable value of about $1.35 billion. And last year, the total value was just under $1 billion. So this is almost a 40% increase. So as you can imagine, that's a huge increase. I mean, these are numbers that we typically don't see. So a lot of growth. As far as the residential valuation, went from $1.3 billion to $1.7 billion. That's over a 34% increase, which again is just a huge number. The median assessed value changed 18.5%, and the reason the 18.5% is basically your existing properties, residential, how much they change from year to year. As far as the percentage change, that's going to include all your residential new construction. So that's kind of the whole blob. So it captures both the new construction and what the assessments, the market change in there. And what's driving it, no surprise, a lot of in-migration, Utah, California, Washington, Oregon. About half the people are coming in from those states. And land is really driving it out here. I mean, you guys have plenty of land to expand in other areas. They don't have that luxury. So, I mean, just a lot of new subdivisions, as we're going to be seeing here in a minute with the new construction report. Commercial and personal property. The real property commercial has increased about 20%, which is pretty good. Across the county, this is only about 10%, so you're seeing a little more on the commercial side. As far as business, personal property, a couple years ago they did away with businesses don't have to pay taxes on property under $100,000. So this is only capturing the over $100,000 properties. And that increased about 15% in total, almost a 20% increase in the commercial and personal property. The new construction is probably the most important, I think, for you guys to understand. It's the, obviously, you have last year's value plus, you know, up to 3%, and then you have that factor, which is the new construction. As you can see, it's a 78% increase in the new construction rule, so that's just huge. Most of it's coming from the new subdivisions, just tons of land being cut up into lots, and that's what's really driving that. The commercial and residential, they're still over 50%, which in any other time would be huge. Biggest dwarfed by the new subdivision. So overall, new construction is just really going crazy. And the overall tax burden is always kind of interesting. Basically, it's shifting a little bit. As you can see, the residential is about 87%, which is paying 87% of the taxes as the whole. And then it increases into 2018 to 88%. And the reason that's happening is just there's more homes going on in value than commercial property, so it ends up shifting a little bit. So, but basically that's puts it into questions and answers. It's just a hot market out there, and we're seeing huge increases in pretty much every aspect of the market. So, I mean, probably not a whole lot you don't know, but this actually helps get some numbers there for budgeting and stuff that your finance team can kind of help you guide through that. But do you have any questions?
Questions?
No.
Well, thank you very much. I guess so one thing that we have kind of been talking about is with growth at the rate that it's happening, we're kind of starting to worry about some of the sustainability of services because, a 3% increase certainly doesn't keep up with that kind of a growth rate. So I'm just not asking for an answer. There's just something that's concerning to us. And
yeah, this market doesn't seem sustainable. I mean, as it stands with these increases, the population growth and everything, but we had our last, 2006 and 2007 and 2008, as we ramped up kind of in the same scenario, and then it completely dropped off. Could we be heading for something again like that? It's hard to kind of anticipate that, but it seems like a much healthier market this time than what we experienced before. Yeah,
definitely is different.
But yeah, at the same time, you always want to be conservative in how you run your numbers.
Good.
So hopefully this helps out.
It does. It's very helpful to see that every year, and I appreciate you coming out to do that, and we appreciate that you chose CUNA.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to come out here.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Next we have the City of CUNA 2018 Financial Audit Presentation from Bailey and Company.
So I have a paper copy in front of me. I don't know if you guys have the PDF copy in front of you or not of the audit.
We do.
Okay, so the page numbers I'm giving you are the page numbers on the bottom of the paper copy, so it'll be a little bit different for the PDF.
Okay.
So we're starting with page 3 with our audit report, and we're looking at the summary of opinions. It's at the bottom of that page. So there's several opinion units within your city, and each one you have to express an opinion on, and normally you see this in one little paragraph if everything's considered unmodified. This year we do have a qualified opinion on some of your opinion units because there was a change in governmental accounting standards. So in the past, under GASB 45 for other post-employment benefits, the city's been able to get away from having to address that standard because it has to do with whether you pay for any of your insurance for retirees when they retire. And with that standard, they basically said if you are not covering any of those costs, that COBRA, it was under COBRA, so the retired employee was paying the entire cost, you didn't have a liability. And under GASB 75, they're now saying, no, you have a liability. You have to have an actuarial valuation done to determine what that liability would be. And it's under what they call, the idea is there's an implicit rate subsidy. So they're saying you're paying a higher insurance now because you allow retirees to stay on your plan. And I don't know of insurances out there that actually allow you to exclude them. So it's the retirees that are between retirement when they retire till age 65 when they qualify for Medicare. So that difference in what you pay for that premium had you not allowed them to be on the insurance is where that liability is coming from. It's not really a liability that you're ever going to actually pay. You're paying it as you go. So, but the actuaries have determined that there's something there that needs to be booked, and they've lobbied for it, and they've convinced the AICPA that there should be something on your financial statements for it. So because of that, your governmental activities and your business type activities and then your proprietary funds that have payroll in them have this qualified opinion. And then on the next page, it goes into basically the explanation of what I just told you about why there's a qualification. And then the third paragraph tells you the opinion units, again, that have an unmodified opinion, a clean opinion. The following paragraphs after that address some required supplementary information that's in your financial statements. Mostly has to do with the pension schedules, your net pension liability, and some budgetary comparison schedules. And then after that, at the bottom of the page, the last couple of paragraphs there, it addresses that there's some more detailed information provided for your general fund, for your budget to actual comparison. And then there's some combining statements for what we call your non-major funds. And there's a grant fund in there and a couple of your capital project funds. So you have one where you've set aside money for capital improvements, and then you have your park impact fee fund. And those are considered non-major funds. Just based on a percentage calculation is why they're non-major funds. And then the next page, so our report goes into three pages now. It has a paragraph there on that last page that discusses the next report that I need to go over. And this is a report that's required under government auditing standards, which is required for every government in Idaho. That spends over $250,000, has to have an annual audit. Your audit has to include this piece of the engagement with it. So that report starts on page 43. So this report's telling you that we tested internal controls and compliance. And if we had found any significant issues, they would be listed as findings in this report. There's no opinion expressed on your internal controls or compliance. It's just simply identifying if there were issues and that we tested these things. There were no issues that we identified that we considered significant. And then I can go through your financial statements or just sort of hit the highlights. It's up to you.
How far do you want to get into it?
Highlights are fine.
Highlights are good.
Okay.
Thank you.
So page 6 is where your financial statements actually start, but we're going to go to page 8. And the reason I'm skipping those first two pages is that's your government-wide statements. So it's taken your governmental funds, which are your general fund, your latecomers fee fund, those non-major funds. Those are funds where they don't book things on the fund financial statements for capital assets, net pension liability, long-term type stuff. And so it's a little more meaningful to go to the fund financial statements than to look at those government-wide statements. And on page 8 is your balance sheet for your governmental funds. And so you can see there that how much you have in your assets, in your liabilities, and the difference between the two. And then on page 10, we can look at what you had in your governmental funds for the year. So you had a net increase for the year, your net change in your fund balances. At the bottom right of that page was a little over $1.6 million. And that is just part of your city. So then on page 12, you have your proprietary funds. And the change in your fund balances on that one, which it's identified as net position, just a difference in terminology, is actually the totals on page 15. And again, sort of on the bottom right there, you had a change in your net position of a little over $2.3 million. And then the next few pages just show you your changes in cash and just those proprietary funds. And so you can see your cash on page 17 in that far right column, almost to the bottom, shows that your cash increased about $3.9 million over the prior year. And that's just in your proprietary funds. Your cash overall actually increased about $5 million. And then on page 20, this is your agency fund. That's addressed farther in the financial statements about what that is. That's on, and that would be on page 22, about in the middle of that page, right above the heading that says Bay Pacific County. So that fund collects money for others. And so when it's not actually your money, you're an agency for them. So That's why it's only lists the balance sheet for that fund. You don't see activity for revenues and expenses because they're not your revenues and expenses. Page 23 of the notes to the financial statements tells you that you have some restricted funds. So the purpose of the restriction, what the restrictions are, sort of listed in a table there in the middle of that page. And then right above that table, you have one fund that you consider your fund balance assigned, and that's one of those capital project funds. And it's assigned for capital improvement projects. And that just means you've set money aside for that purpose in the future. And then if we want to skip to page 31. So you had some transfer activity during the year. So you can see what, and that's in note 6, and you can see the transfers that occurred between your funds during the year. And then just under that, above note, right above note 7, you can see that your grant fund had a bit of a cash deficit. So we say that the money came basically from the general fund. It loaned the money to that fund to cover the shortage until receivables come in, because you do have about $10,000 in receivables in that fund at the end of the year.
Okay.
And on the next page, note 10, there was a correction of an error. This was a purely a government-wide adjustment. So there was part of your cost for your comprehensive plan should have been capitalized on your government-wide statements as an intangible asset. So there was about $75,000 there that didn't get capitalized on the 2017 financial statements, and this just shows that there was a correction for that.
Okay.
And then the last note, you can see there that the changes in your capital assets. You had some construction in progress that was completed and some additional construction in progress that was added. You can see your a couple of other small additions. You had a vehicle, I believe, that was spread across some funds. And then on the next page, you can see for your proprietary funds, that you had some large increases for your construction in progress and some other increases for your buildings and equipment and other improvements. And then as far as the rest of the financial statements go, it's just those budgetary comparison schedules that start on 36. And it's just of your general fund and your latecomers fee fund. Accounting standards only require that a budgetary comparison schedule is presented for your major governmental funds. So you won't see these schedules for your proprietary funds or for non-major funds. You can choose to have them in your financial statements, but they're not required to be in there. And you can see that you, on page 36 is your general fund budgetary comparison schedule. And you can see there that you budgeted for $5.7 million in expenses and you spent almost $4.8 million, so you were under budget. And then on your revenues, you budgeted for almost $4.7 million and you actually brought in about $5.4 million. So that's good. Budgeted well.
Thanks.
And that is all I have. There is a letter that was probably came with your PDF attachment. It was just a communication letter. That's just a boilerplate letter. There was nothing of any significance in that letter.
Good.
Thank you.
Anybody have any questions? Awesome. It's always good to have a clean audit. We like that.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That brings us to item 6A. Yes, sir.
Just
a
point.
We need to approve that, don't we?
No, because it isn't an action item on the agenda that I see.
Oh.
It would be my recommendation that this be placed as an action item on the next City Council agenda for approval, and I also would encourage that if staff have any comment about this audit, that be invited. I don't know that they do, but the statute says that you're supposed to approve the audits within 9 months of the end of the fiscal year. So as long as you get this completed in June, you'll be timely. But it would be an action item because I do think it's something that the governing body should approve.
Yeah.
And then we provide one to legislative services, which either we do or the auditor does.
Jared, do we know in this case, does the auditor do that? It seemed like they did before.
So I think that, Jared Empey, City Treasurer, I believe that we actually communicate that to the proper authorities.
Okay. All right. Very good. All right. Yeah, so Ariana, if you would just make a note of that to add that to the next agenda as an action item. Item 6A, continuation of the public hearing held May 7th, 2019, to accept testimony regarding the meeting between staff and the applicant as required by the City Council, and consideration to approve 1807 AN and 1805 ZC for Fissel Farm LLC and Bodal Farm LLC. Sam Weiger.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, Sam Weiger, Planner 171 West 4th Street. On May 13th, CUNA Planning and Zoning staff and the applicant Tim Eck met per City Council's request at the public hearing on May 7th. The applicant compromised by agreeing to proceed with the application as previously presented without a multifamily component at this time. If the applicant wants to proceed with a multifamily component in the future, the applicant will be required to split the Bodal lot and rezone to a density that is compatible with the applicant's density need. The lot split will require a public meeting with City Council as the decision-making body, and the rezone will require a public hearing with the Planning and Zoning Commission as the recommending body, and the City Council as the decision-making body. Additionally, the city would enter into a development agreement with the applicant to ensure townhomes will be going in on these properties as discussed and that they will comply with city code. On May 13, Council President Boobin Vonderhaar sent the Planning and Zoning Director an email asking the following questions. Under the current zoning rules, what would be required if the applicant of the applicant in order to build multifamily housing? What zoning, what steps from this point, et cetera. Two, would the applicant be permitted to build multifamily on this site if it was zoned C1 but they executed a development agreement? What are other options to allow multifamily development short of a rezone? Three, what concerns, if any, does the city have with executing a development agreement or other agreement in this situation? Four, what concerns, if any, does the developer have with executing a development agreement or other agreement in this situation? Planning and zoning staff, the planning and zoning director, and city attorney answered the questions in an email that came from staff and was sent to Mayor Steer, members of the council, the applicant, the applicant's attorney, the planning and zoning director, and the city clerk, which stated, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, Mr. Eck and Mr. Bauer, Council President Boobin Vonderhaar asked staff questions about case numbers 18-07-AN and 18-05-ZC, Bodal Steiner annexation, which will be continued at the public hearing tomorrow evening. I've copied and pasted her questions, staff's answers, and the city attorney's legal review of the questions and answers. Under the current zoning rules, what would be required if the applicant of the applicant in order to build multifamily housing? What's zoning, what steps from this point, et cetera? The applicant will be required to apply for a lot split and rezone the new parcel that comes from the lot split to whichever residential zoning density, R8, R12, et cetera, meets the applicant's need. This application will have to be submitted after the approval of the applications that are being presented on May 21st, WFG, which stands for William Gigray. Comment, I will defer to your comment above as long as such an application could be made for the R8, R12, et cetera, if such zones could be considered in compliance with the city's comprehensive plan. You may want to present an additional approach, which would be that the applicant amend their application in order to seek the current zoning for their intended use and development. An applicant could at the same time file an application for plat approval in order to lock in the use currently allowed in the zoning designation they request in their amended application. I realize they will have to start over if they follow this approach. Another approach could be a planned unit development pursuant to Chapter 7 of Title 5 CUNA City Code. And Planning and Zoning Director added all of those suggestions were ran past Mr. Eck. He did not want to move forward with those ideas. Would the applicant be permitted to build multifamily on this site if it was zoned C1 but they executed a development agreement? What are other options to allow multifamily development short of a rezone? And staff answered, no, the applicant cannot build multifamily on this site with only a development agreement and approval of the current applications. The only option for the applicant is to apply to split the Bodal property and rezone the split parcel to residential. William gave a great comment. I agree with your comment. The city cannot authorize a use not allowed in the zone by a development agreement. See Idaho Supreme Court decision, City of Coeur d'Alene versus Simpson, 136P.3D310, 142, Idaho 839, 2006, County of Ada Board of County Commissioners versus Walter 96. I don't need to read all the numbers, fancy numbers.
And I didn't look any of those up.
What concerns, if any, does the city have with executing a development agreement or other agreement in this situation? The city is concerned that executing a development agreement, and this is staff's answer, the city is concerned that executing a development agreement will allow the applicant to get the multifamily that he needs without complying with the new ordinance. The city is also concerned that if the applicant does not comply with the new ordinance, future applicants will attempt to utilize this strategy against the city. William Gigray comment, I recommend this answer. The answer to this question is the same as the answer to question two, the applicant's intended use of the subject property, which is in violation of the uses authorized in the requested C1 zone, cannot be authorized by a development agreement. What concerns, if any, does the developer have with executing a development agreement or other agreement in this situation? Staff answered, the developer did not express any concerns about the development agreement. William Gigray comment, I recommend that the answer to this question is the same as the answer to two and three. The developer's intended multifamily use cannot be authorized in a C1 zone by a development agreement. And I have copies of this question and answer if anyone would like a copy.
Okay.
And on May 21st, planning and zoning staff and the planning and zoning director received a revised legal memorandum from the city attorney. The email stated, hi, Sam, we have updated our legal memo regarding the issue of the change in the zoning ordinance in response to the March 18th letter written by Jeff Bauer, Mr. X attorney. The attached is the same as my earlier memo, but we have added the Foster versus City of St. Anthony, Idaho Supreme Court case, which is supportive of my opinion on this matter. Staff responded to the city attorney and planning and zoning director saying, Bill, since this was submitted after the packet submission, I will email this to City Council, Tim Eck and Jeff Bauer. I will also bring hard copies to the hearing in case as well and mention that you submitted this today in my presentation, as I'm doing right now. The city attorney responded to planning and zoning staff and planning and zoning director with thanks, Sam, and staff sent an email with an attachment of the revised memorandum to Mayor Steer and members of the City Council, the applicant's attorney, the planning and zoning director, the city attorney, and the city clerk's office this afternoon. The email stated, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, Mr. Eck, Mr. Bauer, a revised legal memo regarding case numbers 18-07-AN and 18-05ZC, Bodal Steinman annexation, has been sent to me today from City Attorney Bill Gigray. I have attached the memo to this email for the record. The applicant's attorney, Mr. Jeff Bauer, responded to planning and zoning staff, Mayor Steer, and members of the council, the applicant, the planning and zoning director, the city attorney, and city clerk's office stating, thank you, Sam. We have reviewed. The applicant maintains that its rights were vested at the time of application. We are looking forward to advancing this position at tonight's hearing. See you then. I have physical copies of these as well. And this is Exhibit C7. The Q&A is Exhibit C6. And I have copies as well of the revised legal memorandum from Mr. Gigray, if anyone would like a copy of that. Staff has determined that the annexation rezone for this request generally complies with the goals and policies for CUNA City Title V of CUNA City Code, Idaho Code, and the Comprehensive Plan. The Planning and Zoning Commission recommended a condition that states the preliminary plat for the 38.98-acre parcel would include no more than 25 acres of multifamily housing. Staff recommends condition number 12 on the staff report be removed from the conditions of approval. And I will turn this over to the city attorney to discuss the revised legal memorandum.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor, members of the council, I really don't have a lot to add. The legal memorandum that we have submitted, the revised one, is basically the same opinion that I rendered before. It's just we've added the additional case, which involved the factual situation in the city of Sandpoint, Idaho.
You know, Chris would be giving you cross eyes if you were.
Oh,
if
Bill Gatebray, city attorney, 5700 East Franklin Road, Nampa, Idaho. I'm sorry. I'm terrible about that. I admit it.
And you're the one that brought it up.
I am, and I bring it up, but when I exempt myself,
okay.
Unsuccessfully, of course.
Yeah.
But anyway, we believe that case also supports our position. Quite frankly, in terms of the particular issue about multifamily use, I'm not even sure that's before you at this point because of the fact we don't know applications that I'm aware of for any development of any multi-use facility. On the other hand, I think the staff has tried to be very clear about what their intentions would be if there is a subsequent application for some multifamily use in a C1 zone in the city of CUNA. In this instance, all you're looking at is an application for annexation and a zoning designation, and the zoning designation is then going to key into the existing ordinance that you have. And so, in our opinion, that's what will apply. And then subsequent applications for specific developments, of course, will then apply as the ordinances exist at that point in time.
Okay. Questions for Bill?
No? Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Bauer, would you like to?
I have an exhibit I want to submit as well, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Dear council members, Jeff Bauer, Givens Pursley, 601 West Bannock in Boise. Mr. Eck, the applicant, is here with me tonight. He's planning to provide rebuttal testimony and answer the council's questions then. I do want to give a brief overview. I know this is continued, so I won't belabor the applications. But there are two applications before you tonight. The first is for an annexation and rezone of what we call the Steiner property. We're asking for R6 zoning along with the annexation, and that piece of property is designated on the comp plan map as medium density residential. So we're right in the middle of your medium density residential code, R6. We think that R6 is the right designation here because it does border commercial property. So we are asking you for R6 tonight and not any lesser zoning designation there. Planning and Zoning Commission did forward a recommendation of approval for the R6. The second application, the one that has become a thorn in everyone's side, is this rezone application. So this is a piece of property that's already annexed. It's currently zoned agriculture. We're asking for C1 zoning, and that is consistent with the comp plan, which designates this piece of property as commercial. So that's the overview. One more issue there, as staff mentioned, P&Z did recommend approval of the rezone with a condition that only 25 of the approximately 40 acres be allowed for multifamily. We volunteered that condition at the commission, and it's still acceptable. Okay, getting into the meat of it here. As the council knows, we did continue this application with a recommendation or an imprimatur, I would say, from the council to explore with staff whether a DA could be implemented with the current rezone application to put some sideboards on the multifamily use. That meeting did occur with staff and the applicant. Attorneys were not involved, and I'm here tonight because we feel like that meeting did not produce the results the council expected, and we don't think it recognizes the vested rights that we have either. Really, if you boil it down, what staff's recommending tonight is just a new application for a new piece of property. It doesn't recognize any of the arguments we've raised. So we're not in favor of that recommendation. I'm going to go over the background here real quick again because I think it's important on the rezone. First, prior to filing, as Mr. Eck testified, he did work with staff to pick a zone that would allow multifamily. We picked C1 with staff and filed that application. The application was filed in November of 2018, and it was deemed complete by staff on November 19th of 2018. Both the city code and the city's rezone form checklist, which I've submitted as an additional exhibit tonight, both of those things require that an applicant provide this council and the city with their intended use of the rezone. So what the city code says at section 513-3 sub D, applications for rezone must, quote, include the proposed use. The rezone checklist, and I've highlighted it for you, it echoes the code and states that the applicant must submit a letter of intent indicating the reasons for the proposed rezone. We did submit that letter, and we did state our purpose, and that's on page 20 of your packet tonight. I'm going to flip there so I can talk about it. On page 2 of that letter, so page 21 of the packet, about midway down, the applicant's letter in support specifically states that the Bodall property is proposed to be C1, parenthesis, multifamily / apartments, end parenthesis. When this application was filed in November, multifamily residential was an allowed use in the C1 zone. What that means is that no additional application was required for multifamily to be an allowed use at the time. Furthermore, the express purpose of this application was multifamily, as indicated in the letter. Planning and Zoning Commission recognized that multifamily was an allowed by right use, and that's why they put the condition on us. In February, while this application was pending, the city did amend the C1 zoning code to prohibit multifamily residential. As we discussed at our last hearing, the law in Idaho is clear that the law at the time of an application is the law that dictates the applicant's rights. Therefore, the C1 zoning amendment does not affect our application. The city attorney has provided a legal memorandum, and he amended that legal memorandum today. It's on page 96 of your packet. But I want to direct you to page 97, and specifically the opinion section. This is really kind of the meat and potatoes of the issue. I'll start off with what we agree on. And if you look in that paragraph, there's some italicized language that echoes what I just said. An applicant's rights are determined by the ordinance and existence at the time of filing an application. We agree. We do disagree with the facts that are after this law. And it's important that these are facts and not law, because I think this council is comfortable understanding what our position is based on the facts, given that Mr. Giger and I might disagree about the law. So the first fact we disagree with, the city attorney states that the law at the time of the application rule does not apply here because the applicant has not filed an application for multifamily use. We disagree. I'd refer you back to page 21 of our application. We filed the only application available at the time to designate multifamily use. Second, the memo states that the rezone application does not seek approval for multifamily. Again, for the same reasons we disagree, the application mentions multifamily specifically. And then third, the memo states that we needed to file something else, a PUD or a plat. We disagree with that as well. those are mechanisms for subdivision development, not a use. We're here talking about a use tonight, and that's multifamily. So we disagree with that statement as well. The Supreme Court has created this law, the application law at the time of the application rule, and the reason for it is, quote, it protects the applicant from a zoning change made by a city for the purpose of defeating an application. And I think that can be boiled down to a pretty simple concept. My dad used to tell me when we were having a little competition of one sort or the other, he'd say, Jeff, you can't change the rules mid-race. And if the city interprets, if it takes the city attorney's interpretation of this rule and prohibits multifamily use here, it would be changing the rules mid-race, and the law doesn't allow that. In short, we believe we have vested multifamily rights. We are still willing to enter into a DA, but given we've already continued once, I don't think that's necessary now. I think this council can craft conditions tonight that will put sideboards on the multifamily development we're entitled to that everyone can be comfortable with. We do understand the city's desire for commercial, but we think that needs to be mitigated with the need for transitioning of density as well as the rooftops to support the commercial. So tonight we've proposed these conditions. No more than 20 acres of multifamily, which is a 5-acre reduction. Multifamily product limited to townhome style product only. No apartments or fourplexes. And gross density of the multifamily not to exceed 10 units per acre. We believe this is a good compromise that acknowledges the city's concern for its commercial zones while balancing our vested rights to multifamily. That's all I have for you tonight, and I would stand for any questions.
Questions for Mr. Bauer?
I have a couple. I guess my first question is, am I understanding your suggestion correctly that applicants are legally bound to developing whatever they include on this initial proposal saying that they want to rezone, and they're not allowed to stray from that at all?
Mayor Steer, Councilmember Boobin van der Hart, I think that the checklist is a mechanism to inform this council of what an applicant's proposed uses are for a zone change. And I think that it does inform the council about what the applicant's proposing. And I talked with Councilmember Cardoza about this at the last hearing. I don't think that our application specifically referencing multifamily is dispositive of this issue. I think it's a fact that really increases the credibility of our argument that we applied for this, it was known, and the rule got changed out from under us. And I'm going to go on to keep answering your question.
Okay.
This is just a rezone checklist. This isn't a development checklist.
Right.
So I think, you know, you'll typically see this and it says residential, and I think that's all it needs to say.
But do you agree that, that a developer would have the ability to completely change what their plan is? I mean, if they might come in thinking, I want to build like 1-acre lots and then switch to multifamily or vice versa, that they're not in any way bound to whatever they write on this rezone checklist, right?
Mayor Steer, Councilmember Boobin van der Hart, I would agree with that as a attorney for developers, but also I think that the intent of this isn't to specifically say we're rezoning this property to develop 80 units of multifamily, you know, with a gross density of X. I think the purpose is to say when you have a commercial zone that allows a lot of different uses, it's just a general general piece of information for the council to know this is what the applicant's intending to use the property for at this time, whether it's residential, big box, commercial, that sort of thing.
I would argue that perhaps the intent of that is more to make sure at the beginning that the applicant is seeking the right type of rezone. If we ask a question about what are you hoping to do with the property, we're making sure that they're not going down the wrong road in terms of asking for one type of zoning designation when another one might be appropriate.
Absolutely. That makes sense.
Am I understanding correctly then that the staff memo addendum from May 13th is wrong? I mean, that is no longer your position?
Mayor Steer, Councilmember Vuben Danderhart, I'm going to delay that answer for Mr. Eck, who was at the meeting.
Okay.
I wasn't. I can say I don't think that the solution provided by staff provides enough security for the developer to step away from the rights we think we have now.
Okay.
Anything further? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you have anything you wanted to add yet, or do you want to wait for rebuttal? Or? Okay. All right. So we are at the point where we're going to continue this public hearing. We had a sign-up sheet. And no one signed up. Is there anybody who wishes to testify that hasn't had a chance to sign up yet? Okay. All right. Well, do you want to rebuttal that?
Good evening, Mayor and Council Members. My name is Tim Eck. I'm the applicant. 6152 West Half Moon Lane, Eagle, Idaho. Just very casually, I was actually out of the country and making a fast round trip to attend these meetings. Didn't provide me time to get home and change into a more appropriate attire. We go back to the fact that we did clearly articulate in our application what our intended use was. There's no other former application that we could make for a land use application, which is the zoning. Any consecutive applications that we would have made would have been a development application. That's not land use. Land use is one issue. That's what we're talking about here. A development, we're not coming before you with a planned unit development. We're not coming before you with a preliminary plat. We're not there yet. We're trying to get through the land use application that will tell us what we can do with the land. And obviously, when we applied, there was a commercial or a residential aspect allowed. We're required to produce that affidavit, which Mr. Cardozo questioned what this letter meant at the last hearing. What does this mean? Well, that is an integral part of our application. We're required to submit that letter of intent with the application by the city. We have to tell you what we think our intended uses are. There's no other application we can make for this use at that time. Now, a complete different use would be a development for a PUD, but that's a development application. That's not a land use application. So we think we've made every application that we can possibly make within that would have been required to preserve the rights, the uses allowed under the C1 that existed at the time of application. We're not going to build apartments. However, if we did build apartments on the entire site, under that C1 application, there would be no other application to bring forward. There'd be a design guidelines submittal, a design application. There would be no plat. It would be one parcel. There'd be no subdivision of that land. So if we put 100% apartments out there, there would be no development of that land. It would stay as one piece. There'd be a design review by planning and zoning. It wouldn't even come back before this commission again if we were to have moved forward with developing the entire parcel as apartments. We did list apartments in there. We didn't intend to do it all as apartments, but the point I'm trying to make is there's no other application we could have made to preserve our rights under the C1 as it existed. That's a land use application. We're very anxious to move forward with some form of an agreement. When I agreed to meet with the staff was to try and figure out if a development agreement could be entered into. Well, we can't enter into a development agreement if you take the position that we did not make an application for that use, which we believe we clearly did according to the requirements of the city. We listed apartments and multifamily in our application. If you take the position that we didn't make that application, then we have to, and we're literally starting from scratch. The enormous amount of funds and time and effort that's been spent just gets thrown away, and we're starting over. Even if we move forward with C1 as it's currently written, then I got to do a one-time split, which we believe we're allowed, and then go through the whole process again of doing a rezone on this piece, which would now be for a residential use in a commercial land use designated area. And so does that require a comp plan amendment before we can even do the rezone? We have a very limited residential component that we want to consider. We're more than willing to enter into the conditions that Mr. Bauer recommended. But if this commission believes that we did make an application, that our application does clearly articulate our intent to do multifamily and or apartments on this property, and that there's no other application that we needed to make at that time, then we qualify under the C1 that existed at the time of the application. And then we can move forward with that C1 with a very restrictive development agreement that we've discussed, limiting us to 20 acres, limiting us to a maximum of 10 an acre, no apartments, no fourplexes. We want to do townhomes. We want to put a product out there that we can try and introduce a little bit more of an affordable product. As our tax presentation clearly demonstrated, prices are going up, and we are pricing a lot of people out of the market. We're not setting a precedence because I doubt very seriously that the city has another application in front of it that meets all those conditions, applied for before the zoning was changed, articulated on their letter of intent that they were going to do multifamily and or apartments. So I don't think a precedence is established there. So that's where we're at. We've brought a lot of product before you guys. You know that we've generally always stuck to our word and done what we've promised. Planning and zoning thought we were going to build 880 units out there, and they were excited when we dropped it to 550, and now we're willing to commit to no more than 200 residential units. And we don't even know if that'll happen. We just want the option available to us. If we can't find a commercial application that can consume it all other than residential, we want to be able to introduce that residential transition zone within the commercial to buffer into the R6 that then buffers into the R4 that we've got at the Arroyo Vista project. That said, I'll stand for any questions.
Okay. Question for Mr. Eck.
I think you've already answered this, but just to be extra clear, staff memo from May 13th about your meeting is not your position, correct?
I walked out of there with a slightly different understanding of how that meeting came out that was changed quite a bit when I actually saw the memo from staff that's like, I've got no assurance that any of that will happen. If I come back, I believe I can do the one-time split without any approval. I'm not sure if a one-time split requires approval. But beyond that, then I've got to come back. I've got to go through possibly a comp plan amendment. I'm not sure. Nobody's addressed whether we'd have to do a comp plan amendment. But the comp plan says commercial, and if I go R8 or R10, do I have to do a comp plan amendment to put residential in there? Then I've got to go through a rezone to get to where we're already at, and those could just be, you know, there's multiple opportunities for that to be completely shot down. So if the staff believes that, you know, a 200 units townhome project would be a good product for the city, then we can get there tonight by a development agreement as long as you recognize that our application included the residential component, which we believe it did. I don't know where to go from there. But that's, I think we're compromising a lot going from what planning and zoning thought would be a 550 unit down to 200 units. And we don't even know that for a fact, but we're willing to cap it at 200. And we firmly believe that our application submitted as required by the city clearly articulated our intent to put multifamily and or apartments in there where there's no other application available to be made at that time for land use.
So when you say 200 units, are you talking about 200 townhomes with four dwellings in each, or?
No, we would look at a traditional townhome. Well, it could be four units per building. I believe the original C1 required a minimum of three units per roof. It would probably be a variety of, you know, we've built a lot of this product before, anywhere from three up to perhaps eight units per building where they're attached. They're each situated on an individual lot with, you know, zero lot line construction. They would all have, you know, in-structure parking for, you know, generally that's always been built with two-car garages on each one. But this is to try and produce a product that would, you know, accommodate some affordability, higher density next to that commercial component. Now, if Fred Meyer wants to come in and take the whole 40 acres and build another chin and Linder product, well, we'd look at that. But right now, we don't have that. And if we do a residential component in there, that is the maximum that we would want to do. We have no interest in doing apartments there. We have no interest in doing fourplexes there. I know that fourplexes have kind of created a blight. We want to do a product there of higher density residential components that can be sold for, you know, people that can only afford a $250,000 home. Because a single family detached product in CUNA, I don't know that there's any new product out there that's $250,000 anymore. So we're losing affordability for a lot of people, and this is one way to try and bring that, you know, get a little bit of that back in. And we're talking a maximum density of 200 units on the 40 acres. And a maximum coverage of 20 acres. So if we took 20 acres and we could design 10 an acre, that would hit the 200. If we can't come out with a usable design at 10 an acre, then it would only be, maybe it's only 8 an acre, which then drops us to 160. So we're putting multiple caps on there that we're not going to take the 20 acres and find some 15-unit acre product we can put there. We'll cap it at a maximum of 10 an acre and a maximum of 20 acres and a maximum of 200 units or anything below that.
Okay.
I don't necessarily think any of this is unreasonable. I think my overarching issue and concern is whether we even have the authority. I mean, number one issue is what's before us today is a rezone and an annexation. So in theory, what you plan to do with the land is immaterial today because we're not approving any specific use outside of what zoning ordinances say. Second issue is I don't know that we have the ability to override our zoning ordinances tonight by saying we agree that we let you use this land in a manner that conflicts with what the current zoning ordinances said, understanding that we have a disagreement about what zoning ordinances should apply. So I'm struggling with kind of how to proceed in terms of I don't know if the right way forward is just to approve the exact application that's in front of us and then let it be an issue when you go to make use of the land, you know, then it's a question for planning and zoning of is what you're submitting going to be allowed or not. Is that what you're hoping for? I mean, short of reaching an answer on whether, you know, what you're allowed to do with the land tonight, are you just wanting us to go ahead and approve what was originally before us without condition 12 of the about the 25 acres of multifamily?
I'm going to try to take those in turn, Mayor Stevens, Council Member Boobin Vanderhart. Idaho law does prohibit a city from allowing a use that their city code otherwise prohibits. That's the Coeur d'Alene case that Mr. DeGray cited. And what that case stands for is if Mr. Eck were coming to you with a development for a tiger exhibit and, you know, dangerous animals weren't allowed in the city, you can't make an exception. What we're advancing tonight is that the code at the time applies and that this isn't allowed use. So there is no concern with you approving a use that is not allowed. Idaho law, LUPA, allows conditional rezones. So to the extent you want to rezone a piece of property with additional conditions as we've advanced tonight, that is acceptable under Idaho law. And I think it's actually a good idea in this case for the city because it will cap future multifamily development. If you do nothing tonight, Tim sells the property and someone comes back and wants to put 800 units of multifamily on, and they win this argument in court, they can have the 800 units of multifamily. We don't want to do that. We want to cap it today with this condition. So that's why we're asking for approval with these conditions. Thank you.
And are you at all willing to do like a planned unit development once you figure out what commercial is there? Because it's, and I would encourage staff to correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe I'm under the impression that that would be a way to accomplish having both the townhomes and the commercial in a C1 zone. Is that something that you would be open to or not so much? Go ahead.
Mayor Steer, Councilmember Rubin-Vanderhaar. I can't speak for Tim on what he's open to, but the code does allow with a PUD. What it says is any use allowed in the base district is allowed in a PUD, and based on a case-by-case basis, you can pull in prohibited uses. It is discretionary. So we kind of get back to the same position Tim was in beforehand with the staff's memorandum, is if we let our rights slide tonight to some future approval, we have no guarantees, and we're kind of at your mercy later. So I'll let him answer whether he's willing to be there or not.
We're still not absolutely certain what we're going to do out there. We do want to retain a residential component. We think it's needed. We believe that we have rights that would be a use that would be allowed by right under the C1 that existed when we made our application. We believe that our application was timely made to follow, to protect us from changes mid-race, as Jeff mentioned. If this council agrees that our application clearly articulated our intended use, then we have made an application for a use specifically including multifamily and or apartments.
If that's not a bridge I'm willing to cross, or if I'm not willing to meet you at that conclusion, would you be willing to do a PUD? I mean, if we could, and I would need legal to chime in, of course, on the permissibility of this, but if we could commit to the restrictions that you've suggested, that those would be acceptable in a PUD, and somehow memorialize that so that you have some level of comfort that should you bring what we've been talking about, what you've been suggesting you're intending to move forward with, if you brought that to us in a PUD and it met with what you've already suggested it would look like, that would not be something we would take issue with. I want to phrase that carefully so it doesn't seem like we're pre-approving it without seeing it, but you know what I mean? If there was some mechanism that we could figure out where we are essentially giving you some safeguards about what you have suggested you would agree to, the 20 acres of townhomes, density no greater than 10 an acre, that sort of thing, that if we saw that in a PUD for this lot.
Maximum of 20 acres, maximum of 10 per.
Right, right.
And maximum of 200.
Yeah.
So, Mayor Steer, Councilmember Bubenvanderhaar, is the idea here that in addition to those conditions, the fifth or the fourth condition would be, and at the time of any multifamily development, it will be brought forward in a PUD application?
I think so. I mean, I'm spitballing here, but the thing that I'm trying to avoid is, it's clear we have differing legal interpretations of what zoning should apply depending on what use you're wanting to do, et cetera. Rather than us both barreling forward with those differing points of view and knowing that at some point litigation would become necessary, if we can figure out some way to reconcile it now and save everybody a lot of time and effort and money, that would be my preference. I'm not necessarily opposed to what you're suggesting. I appreciate that you've dialed down density and all that kind of stuff, and that it is a product that I don't think we have very much of, if any, in the market currently. So it meets with like a lot of our comp plan goals and all that kind of thing. I'm just obviously nervous about going contrary to what our zoning regs say. Again, I know that there's a disagreement about what rules should apply. So I'm just trying to figure out, is there a way that we can resolve this where you're still getting the end product that you want, but we're not running afoul of our zoning rules?
If we could get a rezone approved tonight with the conditions we asked for and the fourth condition yours that any future multifamily would require a PUD?
I think maybe we are not seeing eye to eye. I am not suggesting that I would approve a rezone with these conditions because our legal is saying that we wouldn't have the ability to do that because this wouldn't be allowed in a C1. So what I'm suggesting instead is if we could get agreement that you intend to do a PUD, if we could give you some level of assurance, because that's what I am feeling. You're saying I'm potentially willing to do a PUD, but I have no guarantee that you guys are going to approve anything that I'm asking for, so it's kind of a leap of faith. And I'm saying, is this like a meet us in the middle type thing, where if we can give you some assurance about what's likely to get approved?
I think if you have a mechanism to give us some assurance, that is something we would be interested in, absolutely.
Okay.
Because again, our only goal here is to preserve the rights we think we have vested. And so if you can get us there through some other mechanism, we're
okay
happy with that.
Did you want to speak, Wendy, or? Are you guys just figuring stuff out?
No, I was just going to let you know that all of these things you're suggesting were discussed in the meeting that we had with Mr. Eck. Additionally, to the rezone checklist, staff requires the commission and council, I believe it's called review. I don't have it in front of me right now. No, it's not that one. It's on page 195 of the packet. The second page, where it says rezone or residential, it was never marked in there or filled out as to the intention of Mr. Eck. While he didn't know how many units, it still wasn't marked what his intention was with multifamily or single family. Or townhouses, I believe, is another option in there.
So I don't see anywhere in the memo from May 13th that a PUD was discussed. But regardless, if it's something that now is potentially a solution, is there a reason that we couldn't enter into some? I'm not saying like pre-approve something sight unseen, but give some assurances about restrictions that we can frame it in some way. Go ahead, Bill.
Yes, Bill.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, you got to remember that PUDs go through a hearing process, and to be pre-committed to an ultimate result, in my mind, would be a mistake by a development agreement. I also do not believe that you can authorize a use in a development agreement that's prohibited by the zoning ordinance that they're applying for. On the other hand, if the one thing that possibly the applicant can find out is whether or not the staff would entertain their intended use with a specific application that they could make for a PUD, that once they made that application would lock in whatever the ordinances are that apply to that application, then at that point they could go forward, and it would be a matter of the decision making of the Planning and Zoning Commission and yourselves about whether you would ultimately grant the PUD or not through the public hearing process.
Is it conceivable to make a PUD application? I guess it would be kind of a generic PUD application that we will do limited to 20 acres, limited to this density, or do we actually have to have a complete layout like a preliminary plat?
You do not need a complete layout. It's just generally how many acres are you going to have in this zone, how many acres in this zone, et cetera, for PUD. And what it is a special use permit for a planned unit development. That's your application mechanism.
So that would be a PUD application that we would submit and run through the process. That would just lay out some generic zones and sizes. Would there be flexibility within that?
There's flexibility, but it depends on how it's approved. If it's approved with a specific amount of acres, that will be an R8, then that's what's assumed you will be going forward with.
And so you couldn't just do a PUD with a maximum of 20 acres at a maximum density of R10 and then go down from there.
And just say the remainder would be commercial, and so that way, in theory, all of it could end up being commercial, or a single acre could end up being residential, and the whole rest, you know, all the way up to the 20.
I'm not comfortable answering this off my cuff, because I want to make sure that I'm absolutely correct when I'm answering it.
Mm-hmm.
I believe staff and legal would need additional time to look at that.
Well, I'm also wondering, is council comfortable with that type of density in that area? I mean, for me, that's just a bad spot of town to put a whole bunch of houses in. The traffic in that area, there's a rise in the road there, and I think no matter what we do as far as that goes, it's going to be uncomfortable for me to approve that kind of density in that area. I don't know how anybody else feels about that.
I don't want to put the cart too far ahead of the horse, but I don't think I have an issue with the density in terms of buffering between commercial into a density residential. So going commercial and then, you know, smaller lots, higher density into the larger lots and the lower density.
If I can comment, if you're going to have any higher density residential in CUNA, where better than right on 10 Mile or right on Meridian? We don't want it on Linder. We don't want it on Black Cat. You know, eventually 10 Mile is a major arterial. It will be expanded to handle that traffic. Our traffic impact study will dictate the improvements we have to put in. The commercial will have a huge impact on traffic. I don't know that R10 on 20 acres would have as significant impact on the traffic there as the commercial would, depending on what the commercial is. How many cars are going in and out of that Fred Meyer on Shinden on an hourly basis compared to, you know, 200 homes? So on one hand, we go C1 and we want the most egregious use there. I think the impact on traffic of the residential is less, but of course the traffic impact study is going to determine all the improvements necessary to meet the proper safety and levels of service. But if that's not a good location, then where would it be? If CUNA doesn't want to have any higher density or any affordable housing, if you do want some higher density and affordable housing, where do you put it? It's more viable than right on 10 Mile or right on Meridian.
And I guess I don't know what you mean by affordable housing. Affordable to who?
Well, exactly. As we saw by the presentation, $400,000, $500,000 homes are going to be a thing of commonplace. Now, in CUNA, there's a lot of people out there that can't afford $400,000, $500,000. If we can do an attached product, we're talking $1,200. You get into a single family subdivision, everybody complains you put a 1,200 square foot house in there. You do a townhome product, you can put in a 1,200 square foot townhome, 1,300, 1,400. It all fits together. Everybody's got two inside parking stalls. It is a more affordable product because it's smaller and because it sits on less land. I've built that same product in San Francisco and it's $2.2 million. But for CUNA, or for anywhere in Ada County, we are facing this, it's on the news every day, this affordability crisis, because we've been so affordable for so long, and I think we're still so far below so many metropolitan areas in the country. You get a single mom with two kids, and maybe she's making $80,000 a year. Can she afford a $500,000 home? Probably not. Can she afford a $250,000 home? Probably. What can we build on a single-family detached product for $250,000? I don't know. We can build anything for $250,000 today. As he's demonstrated, the costs have gone up so much. All of our costs have gone up. Insane. 7 years ago, you get framing done for $1.75 a square foot, and now it's $7.50. That's just the carpenters, and you carry that all the way across the board. And the busier they get, the more they want, and the less reliable they are. Because to go to work one day at $7.50 a foot, and then somebody offers them $8, and they jump ship. Building a smaller product on less land does make it more affordable. That's what I'm talking about by a more affordable product. If we don't have it, we just have all commercial, we just not provided any housing for the people that can, they can step out of a rental, they want to buy, but they can't afford $400,000.
Please.
Mayor Steer, Councilmember Boone-Vanderhaar, I just want to add that there is no opposition to this application. As I think Tim pointed out previously, this is real greenfield development. We have a couple neighbors in the audience, but they're old original parcels as well. With the law that we cited tonight, I believe you have the authority to grant this, and I don't believe it would be challenged. That's all I wanted to add.
I think the issue is I don't believe that we have the ability to do it. So if other council members disagree, certainly they can make that motion. But given that our legal counsel differs with the interpretation that you have, that's why I'm just trying to like beat this drum of, is there a way that we can figure out how to resolve this that's still going to let everybody move forward expeditiously and not bog everything down in litigation that's going to take forever,
If a PUD application could be submitted that Wendy wasn't certain that we could, but just with a limitation on the maximum area that would be
residential.
We just don't know today exactly what is going to go out there. but I think we could move forward with the PUD application. If we can keep it as generic as possible, we can move it forward quickly. We've got to design it and draw it all out. It gets very complicated. But if we can move forward with it as generically as possible, we can get that application submitted very quickly. And then I would assume we would just continue to table this hearing until that PUD application comes forward. Or can we do that? Because I don't want to walk away from the rights that we think we have.
Right.
And I think if we have a PUD application that comes forward that you guys can get behind, and then we've got the support that we need for the PUD application, that we could then move forward under the existing C1 because we've got this PUD application.
Are you okay with that? If we do go ahead and continue this, I don't know if we want to continue to a date certain, like maybe the next meeting, so we can figure out if the PUD piece is how that moves forward, or would you want to just table this indefinitely while the PUD application moves forward so that they come at the same time or close to, or?
I think if we could table it, I hate to say indefinitely, table it indefinitely while staff determines if we can submit a generic, a more generic PUD than a completely specific one. And if we can do it somewhat generically, then I think that's a very fairly simple application to get processed, get it in the works, see how fast we can get it through planning and zoning, get it to city council, and if we're bringing that PUD, and I don't know if we can, bring that PUD forward the same night as the rezone. If we can get there, then I'm fine with tabling it.
Okay. Yeah, I think, and you understand that the PUD, it sounds like, would need to go through planning and zoning commission and stuff like that. So we're talking so we're on the same page with that. Would you... So this is my proposal, and I invite each of you in turn to speak up as to whether it's tenable. I would suggest perhaps continuing this to the next meeting so that in the meantime we can figure out if the PUD plan you've suggested will work. If it will, then at the next meeting we'll just go ahead and table indefinitely. If it won't, for some reason, if we find out in the meantime that that won't work, then we're at least still on the agenda to make a definitive decision so that you're not just hanging out in the breeze forever. Does that sound like a good plan? Or we can move it to two meetings away if you're going to be out of town.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, Bill Gigray, city attorney, I did it that time. I think this idea is probably a good one. I think we've got a situation, if I'm the applicant, and I'm not saying I represent them, and I'm sure that they would quickly agree, especially Mr. Bauer. There's a lot of uncertainty if we go forward with a C1 zone as to the position the city's going to take.
Right.
Is this going to affect future development of their property? Are they going to be facing nonconforming uses, on and on and on? I think that giving them some time to review this with the staff, there are issues that the staff would be able to inform them about if you do go forward with the PUD, the whole process that it would have to go through, how complicated is it going to be to plat in that whole process, what would be the timing. And so I think this would be time well spent by the applicant and the staff to see if that could be sorted out. And then you come back in 2 weeks, either they understand and they've completed it, or the staff and the applicant could say we need another 2 weeks and you can simply continue it again, or they decide, the applicant, no, I want to move forward with our application as it stands and this is our position, or they've got it worked out and we go through the other processes. So I think that would be a very good solution. Particularly, I appreciate the willingness of the applicant to consider that as an approach.
As do I. Does the next meeting work for you, Tim? You were checking your schedule, or would you rather? Yeah. I mean, of course, the hope being that you work with staff in the meantime, everything starts moving forward with the PUD, and then it wouldn't even matter if you were here or not. The next time, we would just table it. You know.
I would like to extend to the 18th.
Okay.
Because I know we're in town that week. And these round trip flights are expensive.
No problem.
And I think the 18th would give us time to be able to communicate with staff to find out if we can get a generic. It's just there's still so many unknowns.
Right. How specific the PUD needs to be, if you can make it generic enough that it meets. Right.
And dumb it down later. And but needing to have a conduit that would preserve that residential component.
Right.
Should it be needed. I think that's. And like I said, we don't know what we're doing. That's why I've got time. We've just been easing through this one.
Sure.
I should have eased into it a year ago and we wouldn't be here.
Okay. Well, I do appreciate you working with us. And, yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, well, and, yeah, it just doesn't make sense for us to spend a bunch of money in legal fees and stuff to argue about it if we can figure out a way that it works for everybody. So.
Absolutely.
Okay, did anybody else have any other questions or issues or anything, or are you ready for?
I'm good.
All right.
So.
Yeah.
Again, there's two applications. Are we able to move forward with the Steiner application on that zoning request? Annexation and zoning. And then table this one to the 18th.
Yeah, hang on just a second. Let me.
My preference still is to table them both.
Yeah, I think it's wise to.
If we're going to table one, I think we ought to table both. You're on the same application.
I mean, I guess I hear what you guys are saying, but they are separate parcels, and one of them. Let me see. Am I reading these correctly? The left parcel is not already in the city, right? We're just going for an annex on that one?
An annexation and a rezone.
The Steiner parcel is an annexation and a rezoning request to R6, and it is in the comp plan as medium density residential. However, it's on the projected future comp plan amendment as mixed use.
Okay.
So if we move forward with an R6, we've got a much more limited use than if we waited until the comp plan amendment comes in, and then it's mixed use, and then it's a whole different ballpark with probably a much more aggressive use in mixed use than R6.
I think based on the reason we gave last time for not moving forward with that still stands today. These developments are being really worked on together from a, you know, from a big picture standpoint, and approving one without the other could cause some future dilemmas down the road. I don't know. I think it's my preference would be to just
not
approve one and not the other.
The two properties are under separate ownership. Two applications were submitted together, but it's two separate properties. It's two separate owners. I just happen to be a member of both, but it is two separate properties. It is two separate owners, and while we don't know what's going to happen on the Bodal, I don't know why we wouldn't want to know what's happening on the Steiner. Because if we got to this point, if we can figure out this mechanism where we can retain a residential component we're going to have high-density residential at R10 contiguous to this piece that we want to limit to R6. If we don't move forward with that and we went straight commercial, then what density would you see appropriate to be right next to commercial? If we just said, we'll just take the commercial that exists, you wouldn't want quarter-acre lots next to that kind of commercial. You'd want some higher density.
Right. So I think that's the reason being forwarded for why we wouldn't approve just the one tonight, is that that you would be maybe making different decisions about how you're laying out the – sorry, I'm going to say the wrong name – Bodal property? Is that the leftmost one?
Yeah. If we have R6 approved, we're going to go in there and produce a layout that's probably going to have higher density contiguous to the commercial, lower density away from the commercial, blending R6 or less. If we're straight commercial, we're probably going to want to go with even higher density in that R6 at the commercial side. If we've already got some high density residential there, then it's probably going to be, a step down from whatever we've got. But it's still, if it's R6, it's R6. We're going to end up with a plat in there, maximum of 6 lots per acre.
So I think the suggestion that's coming from Warren and Joe is that if we have not yet resolved what's happening on one property, it interferes with the other one in the sense that how you lay that out density-wise.
But that's a planning issue.
Right.
That's a preliminary layout.
I don't disagree.
We're not moving forward with right now. I don't like to try and spend all the money and effort and go through all the pre-application meetings and everything to design a plat when I don't even have a land use right.
Right.
So I always like to get my land use rights in place first. So before I even begin to try and lay anything out in that R6 area, I need to know if I've got the R6 or not. So we can't even start that layout process.
Right. Are you going to start that layout process before the C1 issue is resolved?
I'm not going to start that layout process until I have the zoning on the signer piece. But we would start playing with it in the near future. I would go to my engineers, and they'd just start throwing some very conceptual road layouts. That's the way we start. It's just a roadmap layout. And, if we want 110-foot deep lots, we lay out the roads to accommodate that. And then it's just a matter of how wide are those lots. Are they 50-foot wide, 60-foot wide, 50-foot wide over here, and 70-foot wide over here, 80-foot wide over here, and get that transition zone through that 40-acre parcel.
Is it going to mess things up for you significantly if we just keep these together and push them both to the 18th? Or I don't necessarily have an issue with splitting it, but if other folks do, I...
It doesn't. I would just like to get one done so we can focus strictly on the other one. So.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, you may have more clarification on this particular issue in 2 weeks once they've had an opportunity to have an audience with the staff regarding the intentions for what could be done in the C1. You always have the option, even if you continue it at 2 weeks, to move forward with one and not the other at that point in time. The question would be whether you want to do that now. Bill Gigray, city attorney, excuse me.
Does that work for you, Tim? Is that okay if we just push it all?
I
don't want to kick the can down the road forever, so.
We've kicked that one 3 or 4 times, it seems like, and I would just like to get one done and then focus strictly on the other, because our.
If it's helpful at all, my read on it is, it looks like everything complies with the comp plan, it complies with city code. I don't see a reason why we would deny any of the applications that are before us. But the sole reason that I'm not moving forward with approving stuff tonight is just the C1 and how that's kind of tied up and how we have different, you know, we've already gone through it all. But I don't, I mean, I can't speak for all of the council, but I don't see any reason why we wouldn't approve it. It's consistent with the comp plan and, yeah, so, I would hope that we will just have everything kind of figured out by the next time.
And again, if we're moving the C1 forward through some form of a PUD, that's going to be...
It's kicking it farther down the road.
It's going to kick that can a long way down the road. And without knowing what I can do on the Steiner, I can't even begin looking at a layout there.
Okay. So if it's okay with... If it sounds okay to everybody, what I would like to make a motion for, but before I do, I'm just clearing with everybody. I would propose that we table everything to June 18th, okay. And at that point, we will have clarity. You will have worked with staff to figure out with the vague kind of skeleton you can put into place right now, will that suffice for a PUD, and can we move forward in that regard? And if so, then what I would expect would potentially come before us on the 18th would be maybe splitting these two things up so it's clearer, here's what we're being asked to approve tonight, and then we're going to table the rest of this so that it comes forward, you know, at the same time as the PUD, yeah, or however that needs to work logistically, if it can come forward at the same time or has to be right before or whatever.
And can we proceed with a for legal, can we proceed with a rezone and PUD at the same time?
You wouldn't need, a rezone and PUD, yeah. Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, logistically, we'll have to figure out, can they be heard simultaneously or does it need to be rezoned first and then whatever? But as long as everybody's on the same page about whether or not the PUD will work and, you know, what all of our intentions are going forward, if that's the vehicle to get us there or not.
Because if we can hold this, the rezone, while we're getting the PUD caught up.
Right, so that you're retaining your rights in case that falls apart, exactly. Then you still have the ability to argue.
So that we come in here again looking for a C1 approval
to do multifamily.
With a PUD,
right.
With the multifamily also be approved. That way.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page.
And can it be done that way?
Yeah, so that's what we're exploring in the next. In the next 4 weeks is...
Well, my understanding is we're going to explore how vague the PUD can be.
Yeah, and then assuming we can do a PUD, we'll figure out the logistics of do both of them come before us at the same time? Like, what? How does it end up in front of us? What does that look like? Is that...
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, members of staff, it's my understanding they can file multiple applications at the same time. You know, I think at this point that'll be up to staff for their review and their determination with regards to what they will support. The idea, I think, of tabling this for almost a month may be a good idea because that'll give the applicant an ample time with his schedule and the staff to kind of ferret this whole thing out. And I think it's really a good thing to go through because if you're developing property, you want to know you can develop it with the intended land use. You don't want to be running into non-conforming use issues later on or constant fights in the development aspect. So I think I really appreciate the applicant's willingness to entertain this idea. I think it's going to make this a lot clearer situation in a table. And then if you get a report in a month and things are ready to go on one side, you have the opportunity to proceed. And if they're not, we can deal with it at that point. But I think you can't, negotiate this thing as a committee of the whole here. It just is not
the right
venue for it.
Okay.
Did I say Bill Gigg, Gray City Attorney? I better.
All right.
We should make you buy us ice cream or something every time you mess up.
There you go. No, he said you buy us ice cream.
Yeah, you buy us.
All right, I move we continue. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Mayor, before we get any further, Mr. Giggory, if we change this to a PUD in another hearing, Do we have to go back out and publish it and advertise it for public testimony?
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, Bill Gigray, city attorney, with the ice cream sanction looking at me. Councilman Cardoza, yes, because there's a specific process you have to follow with PUDs. They're provided by the Local Land Use Planning Act. They're under the hearing and notice provisions, and they're also governed under your ordinance, and they require that process.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So I guess my question, will the city waive the PUD application fees? Or is there a mechanism whereby any co-op, because now I'm coming forward with a whole new application that we...
Let's figure out if it's even going to work for you to do one first, given that you want it to be kind of vague and open-ended and whatever. And then you can talk to staff about that. Okay. I move. We continue the public hearing in consideration of 1807AN and 1805ZC to our meeting on June 18th.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to table both of those items, 1807AN and 1805ZC, until the June 18th meeting. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, guys.
With your permission, Mr. Mayor, I won't get the opportunity, but Attorney Kirk Houston in our office directed me to say hi to Mr. Bauer. And I don't think I'll get the opportunity to do that before he leaves. Thank you.
Thanks. We appreciate it.
All right. Next, we have the Disabled American Veterans Forget Me Not Days Proclamation. Whereas our community has a continuing sense of gratitude to those disabled veterans who did so much to preserve the American way of life, and whereas the disabled American veterans have worked exclusively for the welfare of our disabled veterans, and whereas the CUNA chapter of Disabled American Veterans has been established to carry on this work in our community, and whereas the Disabled American Veterans offers free services to disabled veterans and their families in filing claims for government benefits and assists disabled veterans with medical, employment, and other problems, and whereas the Disabled American Veterans meet emergency situations that may arise in the family of disabled veterans, now there be it for resolved that I, Joe Steer, Mayor of the City of CUNA, Idaho, do hereby proclaim May 24th through May 27th, 2019, and November 5th through November 11th, 2019, as Disabled American Veterans Forget-Me-Not Days in the city of CUNA.
See, I left out the L.
I know.
Consideration to approve the expenditure of $200,000 out of park impact fee fund to start construction on Ashton Estates Park. Bobby Withrow.
For the record, Bobby Withrow, Parks Director. Mayor Council, April 18th, we had our Park Impact Fee Committee meeting, and they approved to come talk to you guys about spending money on an upcoming park. About a year and a half ago, we got 3 acres in Ashton Estates, and we're ready to get started on it. We want to start with, and we think we can do it for $200,000, small parking lot, restrooms, and a fence around it, because part of it is higher than the sidewalk. There's a kind of a slope, so we need to fence part of it off. And then open space, anticipating about 2 acres of open space and playground equipment.
Good.
questions?
And this is the park over where they're building the NB supply in that little neck of the woods over there, is that right?
Yes, sir.
I move we approve the expenditure of $200,000 from the Park Impact Fee Fund to start construction on Ashton Estates Park.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve the expenditure of approximately $200,000 to start developing the Ashton Estates Park from the Park Impact Fee. Is there any further discussion? Ariana, would you poll the council, please?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Good. And that motion carries. Request for funds in the amount of $45,000 for downtown streetlights. Bob Bachman, Public Works Director.
For the record, Mayor and Council, Bob Bachman, City of Kena Public Works Director. If you guys recall, during the budget process, we put in a request to buy the lights for phase two. You guys approved half of the expense for the lights. It was brought to my attention a couple days ago that with the tariff stuff going on, that they're anticipating the prices of the lights going up 30% to 40%. So in order to get in front of that, I thought I'd bring that back to you guys for approval to buy all of the lights. If you recall, in phase one, the lights cost us roughly $12,000 per light, and we're getting them substantially cheaper than that by buying them ahead of time. So I would just make a request that we use contingency funds to up to $45,000 to buy the rest of the lights. One thing to note on that is there is a small chance that we don't do that. We just don't have the answer yet. Basically, we have to make sure with the federal funding that sole sourcing them that is okay, but they told us today they're 99% sure. We just don't have the complete approval on that. But so I would just stand for any questions and ask permission to proceed with that.
So this is contingent on that federal funding? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, we just have to verify that. So federal guidelines require you to get three bids on three like products, all Buy America, which is kind of the funny part I'll get to on this one. So you have to meet Buy America standards with three like products with three bids. However, since we have a dedicated product we picked in phase one, this would be sole sourcing them, so we would basically bypass the three bids and the three like products because we use that product in phase one. So we're just getting approval that works to do it that way, which we believe it does, and so does our consultant that's working on it. We just have to get the official okay.
And the tariffs apply why?
So the tariffs, it's a Buy American standard, so the still of the light is American-made still. The electronics components in the light are made in China. So that's where we get hung up on the tariffs on it. So.
Thanks, Trump.
No comment.
Makes sense to me, and I remember when you asked before, I mean, we're pre-purchasing these in order to make sure that they match, which is a pretty big consideration for me, honestly. So I move we approve the expenditure of up to $45,000 from the contingency fund for downtown streetlights.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the amount of expenditure of up to $45,000 for the downtown streetlights. Is there any further discussion? Would you poll the council, please?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. These are our favorites. Consideration to approve ordinance number 2019-18, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Kuna, making certain findings and enlarging the boundaries of the Kuna Municipal Irrigation System by the inclusion of Ada County Assessors Varial Construction Incorporated and declaring water rights appurtenant thereto are pooled for delivery purposes and directing the city clerk to record this ordinance as provided by law and directing the city engineer to provide the notice of this ordinance to the New York Irrigation District the owners and update the irrigation system map and providing an effective date. And these are the same routine things we always do. So.
Yeah. Move we waive three readings of Ordinance 2019-18.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to waive the three readings of Ordinance Number 2019-18. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried.
I move we approve Ordinance 2019-18.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve Ordinance Number 2019-18. Would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Consideration to approve Ordinance Number 2019-19, a municipal annexation and zoning ordinance of the City Council and the City of CUNA, making certain findings and declaration of authority and annexing certain real property, to wit, Ada County Assessor's Parcel Number S13254385000, owned by SSM2 Company, situated within the unincorporated area of Ada County, Idaho, and contiguous to the corporate limits of the City of CUNA, into the City of CUNA, Idaho, and respectively establishing R6 zoning district classification of said real property, and amending the official zoning map, and directing the city engineer and the city clerk, and providing an effective date.
I move we waive three readings of Ordinance 2019-19.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to waive the three readings of Ordinance 2019-19. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve Ordinance 2019-19.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve Ordinance 2019-19. Would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boone Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Is there any announcements we want to make over there at the table or up here from the bench? Okay.
June 4th, I believe, is our next meeting, and that'll be the comprehensive plan. So if you haven't already gotten a big old start on it, please do, so we don't have a meeting till midnight.
Okay.
Bobby, update.
So far, so good. Vortex will be here tomorrow to start training us on how to, or all the components work inside the pump house. The sand filter, the UV light, and then the controller that controls all the components. And as long as nothing horrible happens, it should be open for a rainy weekend.
Excellent.
2019 keeps, Memorial Weekend.
My wife keeps asking me if we can announce that, and I said no. No, let's wait. Anything else? All right, we need to adjourn to an executive session pursuant to Idaho Code Section 74-206-1F.
I move we adjourn to executive session pursuant to Idaho Code Section 74-206-1F to communicate with legal counsel for public agency, discuss the legal ramifications of and legal options for pending litigation or controversies not yet being litigated but imminently likely to be litigated.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded, and we will want counsel and legal. And I think we'll probably want Wendy and possibly Bob.
I nominate Bill as secretary. 1, 2, 3, not it.
Yeah. Did you hear the train?
That will get you out of ice cream for this meeting.
Should just be like a swear jar kind of situation.
Right.
Did you get a call from the sheriff yet?
About what?
Remember, I met with him today.
Oh, my God.
You didn't get a call from him yet, did
you?
I guess you'll find out later. No, not really.